Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
The biggest common theme, and we talk about this all the time, and you talked about this on our podcast, is a full glass can't receive water. In other words, a lot of the greatest people that we've met so far, and we've met many more guys than we've interviewed so far, the greatest guides have this unsatiable desire to get better and better and better and better and learn. And so we're seeing that. There's just a passion, just a love for fishing that people have. And there's different ways they guard it and try to nurture that, kindle that. And then really a lot of the guys, you know, you mentioned this, you know, we at first it's just like, wow, I can't believe this guy sat down. Oh, wow, I can't believe this guy would meet with us. And then, just what you said, and you realize, no, these are really good. They have really good people skills. Yeah, and it makes sense, right? You're on a boat with a person every day for 30 years. Like, you should be good with people, or you got to be a really, really good fisherman. This is Hunter Levine from the Captain's Collective.
And Josh Wells, also with the Captain's Collective.
And this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
I'm always looking at the podcast world and seeing if there are some new ones that I should listen to. Apple does a great job of serving them up, either in the new and noteworthy or what's hot, or sometimes in the related category. And recently I came across one that I thought was pretty interesting, and it was called The Captain's Collective. And I looked at it, and the description says, a podcast dedicated to gathering wisdom, knowledge, and stories from captains and other industry leaders. So I looked at it, and I thought, well, that sounds interesting. First episode, number 001, none other than Harry Spear, a true legend in the Florida Keys. And Harry moved on from the Florida Keys and ended up in Panacea, Florida. He's building boats these days. I have kind of lost touch with him and what he's doing. So that was very cool to catch up with him and get his perspective. And he's also somebody that I'd like to sit down with. These guys sat down with them, Hunter and Joshua, Hunter Levine and Joshua Wells. They sat down with Harry, among many other captains. They've got John Swanson, they've got Bo Basu, and I sat down with them recently to do one of their episodes. And then we turned around and turned the microphones around, and I interviewed them, kind of about what made them want to start this process. So today's show is a podcast with other podcasters, the Captain's Collective, Hunter Levine and Joshua Wells. It was a good conversation. We met at an off-ramp of the freeway that was convenient for both of us, and it was under these beautiful live oak trees with Spanish moss hanging off of them, and it was situated right between a McDonald's and a country, Chinese country fusion buffet. So it was kind of a interesting little situation. So you may hear some noises from the road, motorcycles, just road noise. So I apologize for that, but I think that you will enjoy this conversation and the noises go away eventually. So anyway, now on to this conversation with Hunter and Joshua. All right, here we are.
Thanks for having us on, Tom.
Yeah, man. Thanks for sitting down. We did one. Now we're turning the mic around and doing it the other way. It was nice to be on yours. I like what you guys are doing. So tell me about the podcast. How does this start?
Yeah, well, Josh and I have been fishing together since we were maybe 14 in high school. Both of our dads loved to fish. My dad worked for the Fish and Wildlife Commission for 30 years. And then when he retired, he spent a few years trying to figure out what he wanted to do. And he just kept fishing. He was just having so much fun. And he decided, you know what? In my 50s, I'm going to go ahead and go for it and become a guide. And so that really kind of kept Josh and I's relationship together since high school and through college. And we both got pretty busy in college and didn't fish nearly as much as we wish we could have. And we were all kind of hanging out. My dad was new to guiding. We were all fishing together and we all enjoy learning. And we said, man, you know, we're listening to these podcasts about businesses and leadership. And there's just so many different things out there from a podcast standpoint. But man, wouldn't it be cool to just be a part of a podcast that goes around and interviews people and gets good information and wisdom? And so we just kind of went for it.
Yeah. It's one of those things we, you know, if you don't know Chip, which you don't, and probably most of these people listening to this don't.
That's my dad.
Hunter's dad. He is a very serious dude. Anything that he does, he is going to be 100% focused and intense, as intense as you can think, times 100, that's what he's going to be about it. So when we came up with this idea, it was one of those, we want to put out content, talk to people, and get information that somebody like Chip or us would want to listen to. Somebody that is serious about fishing, they, you know, something that it's not going to waste their time when they listen to it. You know, somebody like Chip told us the other day, he's like, man, he's like, my time's valuable, man. He's like, I don't want to listen to something that's going to waste my time. It was just one of those things we want to find and talk to people that have information and that know way more about any of this stuff than we do. And
yeah.
That
so this stuff, what's the, tell me about, what's the idea on the podcast? Like just for fishing guides or what?
Yeah. We're trying to make it for people who are just really focused on becoming the best fishermen they can be. So it's called the Captains Collective because it's primarily geared towards captains. We talk a lot about what makes great captains.
The tent is to go to guides?
Yeah, to go to different guides and to learn from them and other people in the fishing industry. So, you know, we wouldn't be against going to somebody who owned a tackle shop and talking about gear, or we got a little bucket list of different things. We're talking about sitting down with the guys from Skinny Water Culture who have been kind of just creating some fun gear and talking with them about their story. So really it's to us, man, we're trying to just have as much fun and learn as much as we can with it and just see where the wind blows.
It's blowing right into one of our mics.
It is blowing here in Live Oak, Florida, between McDonald's and Econo Lounge. Yeah. But
this is the most non-scenic and also scenic place that I've ever been in my life. To paint the picture here, we are literally in Live Oak. I was headed through on I-75 going north, and we put this together. And so we thought, well, where's a good place to meet? And we meet off of this exit, and it's kind of a windy day, but there is a McDonald's, and then there's this nice grassy area between kind of a crack house looking Econo Lodge. But we're sitting under the most beautiful live oak trees?
Yep.
These are one, two, three, four.
These are the live oaks the city's named after.
Really?
I made that up. No.
Well,
we were going to rent a room at the Econo Lodge by the hour, but we thought that might be a little weird.
I'm glad you didn't, because we would all come away with some bed bugs if we went in there or something else. But, these trees are amazing. I mean, this is old Florida sitting between the McDonald's and the Econo Lodge, but very cool. Okay. So anyway, so how did you start it? When you're thinking about starting this podcast, what did it look like?
So we were sitting at my dad's house in Carrabelle, Florida, along the Forgotten Coast. I was just like, you know, I listened to the Tim Ferriss podcast and enjoy it. Let me see what he has out on podcasting. He had a ton of good information, saved up the money, ordered the gear. You had mentioned on our podcast, there's a lot more expenses, at least at first, than there is income. But we thought, man, this is going to be fun. And ordered the gear, and then I got it in, and then I just kind of stared at it for about a month and was like, man, I'm not very tech savvy. Never been very tech savvy. And it kind of intimidated me. And eventually, we kind of got to the point where we were all talking about it. We're like, look, we have the gear. Like, we need to just go do this. We're going to make some mistakes. Things aren't going to be perfect. You know, sometimes you're going to end up sitting down at a table in Live Oak with a big guest, and it's going to be windy, and it's going to be biker week in Live Oak, you know? And so we just went for it. And so the very first person that we emailed was somebody he's a legend in the Keys, he's a legend in Florida, but he's definitely a legend in our backyard, Harry Spear. And it's just like, let's just throw a Hail Mary and send him an email. And I wake up the next day and it's like, yeah, let's meet. What do you got going on Thursday? Like, let's get some pizza and go back to my house and record the podcast. And we're just like, what in the world is going on? You know, we thought like we'd have to be doing it for years. But one of the things that was really obvious out the gate was that the passion, the desire that we had just to hear stories and get information and get different tips. And there's always just, you're mining for gold. The desire that we had to have fun with that and do it has been a shared desire that, one, people are willing to sit down and to share their wisdom and have fun. And at the other end, people are definitely out there wanting to get better and learn.
Yeah. So I find it interesting that I've been able to get the guests that I've been able to get because I mostly have some sort of a former relationship with them. I threw a Hail Mary a couple of times, one to Bouncer Smith, who I didn't know. And Bouncer is a true legend in sport fishing. And just go there, and he's just the nicest guy. Tells stories. I'm like, oh, this was a home run. Like, this was such a home run. But what you guys are doing is interesting because you're coming at it from a different place. And most of the people, I guess, you don't have a relationship with. You did with Harry, I guess.
No, not really. And that's the thing. And maybe you can help answer this question because you're kind of the same, basically the same as everyone else we've done, is we pretty much are just like, hey, let's throw this Hail Mary, see what happens. The worst they're going to say is no. Or maybe they just don't answer our Instagram message, you know? So it's kind of weird. You know, we just basically just throw a long ball to somebody that, you know, somebody like you, we've been watching on TV since we were kids. You know, we kind of idolize as a hero in the fishing industry.
I now feel old.
I didn't mean like that. But, you know, and then all of a sudden they're like, hey, man, yeah, I'd love to do it. You know, when can you meet?
Yeah.
And it's one of those just like, wow, you're kind of taken off guard that they even responded to you because you're a nobody in Tallahassee. And then at the same time, you get down and they're the nicest people. They treat you just like they've known you forever. You know, we've had some crazy
stuff.
That's
super cool. But a couple of the guests that you were mentioning are not podcast guys. Like for the most part, I think everybody that I have talked to about doing this, well, maybe not. Maybe not. I might think differently. But what I was going to say is, I was going to say that almost everyone that I have asked to be on the podcast knows what a podcast is for the most part. Some of the people that you're talking to, you said no. They don't know. They'd never listened to a podcast before. So what's the challenge with that?
Well, the greatest example is Nat Raglan. You know, he is just a legend down in South Florida and in the Keys.
Among legends.
I mean, and with Nat, you know, he's older. He fished 30, 40 years in the industry. Interestingly enough, you know, I sat down, I got the gear out with him. He'd never listened to a podcast or been on a podcast, and he'd been on some television.
Lots of television,
yeah.
And movies. He was, Nat Raglan was Billy Pate's guide in the original 3M Tarpon movies, and so I only watched those about 6,000 times.
And before that, we interviewed him and got his story, but he was involved in the movie industry and actually did some work with sound, but that was, I mean, over 50 years ago.
So when you sit down with him, he's just kind of like, so what, we're just going to talk?
Yeah. And with guys like Nat, you know, Nat got the nickname from Flip Pallet, the senator, because he could just talk so much. That Flip was on the boat with him and said, you just talk so much, you're the senator. And it actually stuck with him.
Lefty Cray probably told him that his mother was probably raped by an auctioneer. He hit somebody with that one time when I was standing there, and I was like, dang.
And Nat can tell the story. And the thing that, you know, with Nat, you know, it was just kind of like we had a mutual friend, and he was like, man, you got to get Nat. And I was like, man, absolutely. If he'd sit down with me, I'd drive there at, you know, we had some interviews in the Keys, and we left at 3 o'clock in the morning to make it happen, you know. And with Nat, you know, we sat down and he hadn't been on one. I just said, you know, just, we're going to ask you questions and just talk in the mic, man. And he was a natural. I mean, you know, some people it comes a little more easy than others. And some people, maybe they've been on television, so you got a feel for what their vibe is, you know.
So yeah, you're right that some people are really good at it. And some people kind of get the idea right away. And what I've been really impressed with, and I'd like to know from you too, because like, wow, how many have you put out?
We've released 3 and we have about 10 queued up.
Okay, so you got 13. And I've been doing this one for almost a year and I've got 80, I think. But I don't feel like I know anything more than what you have learned in 13. I mean, honestly, I literally, so many of these have gone and I feel like I've done some really good ones and I feel like, okay, that one didn't go so well or I didn't get what I was looking for or the guests just didn't really, well, I don't know. I can't complain about any of the guests. You know, it's all about how, what kind of questions you ask and how you set up this whole idea. But there are some people like, the first Hail Mary I threw was Bill Dance. And Bill Dance just, he did all the work. I didn't have to do anything. He just sat down and he told his story like he had been waiting to tell this story for 50 years. And it was great. It was so good. And even if I had prepared better or more, I don't think it would have gone any better. Like what you, but he's a showman and he's an entertainer and he's been on TV for 50 years. Like, of course he's going to be good at it. But I find it interesting when you go, like when I went to Robert Trossett, and right away, Robert Trossett's just awesome. Just storytelling, awesome, you know, very open, just awesome. Some people are just like that.
Yeah, I found already just, well, one, I think there's this sense that like, you know, you talked about how did we get started, but you want everything to be perfect. And then you realize, you know, if I'm going to get good at this, like I'm going to have to start somewhere, you know, like I got to start somewhere. And then you want to really mine out these gold nuggets from each guest. And that's really a skill that you have to hone in. And I think that, you know, it's just like anything else. Like if you want to get good at squatting, like at some point you're going to have to be okay with just, you know, having the bar. And, you know, you can't go, well, if I can't squat 400 out the gate, I'm just not going to do it. And you can't go, if I'm not going to just nail every interview with the perfect question, and then it's probably not for you. You got to be willing to get better. And so we'll get in the car and all the time be like, oh man, I can't believe we did this. And you just got to learn from it.
Do you listen to them after?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We listen
to them
after.
Do you edit your own?
I edit my own right now. I feel like I use Logic Pro X and or 10 or whatever, and I feel like the capabilities of it are so beyond me, but I can't afford to hire somebody to edit them right now personally.
Yeah no, I know all about that. Well, that's cool. So what are you hoping to create? Like you said, you want to create something that your dad would listen to and people that want to fish are listening to. But I mean, when you look at it, kind of like, man, this time next year, I'd like to blue sky. What would you think, like, for a startup podcast, what would be successful in 1 year from today?
It's a good question. I think that for us, just content that we love and content that somebody, maybe they, a year from today, they find out they love fishing and they go on the podcast and they go, oh man, I gotta listen to that one. You know, I've always wanted to hear this guy's story. You know, I've seen him on show before, and you know, and I think, I mean, truthfully, for us too, like, man, we just want to have fun. You know, we got in the car leaving Isla Mirada a couple weeks ago, and Josh and I, we were just talking, and Josh looked at me and goes, "These are the good old days." He's like, you know, how people talk about like back in the good old days.
Yeah,
he's like, "These
That's
are the good
awesome,
old days,
man."
Yeah,
That's
I mean,
awesome.
We're gonna look back when we're 50 or 60. Dude, remember we were in our 20s and we hopped in the truck at 2:30 a.m. and drove to the Keys and did some podcasts and then turned around and drove back? That was crazy, yeah. You know? And whether anything comes of this podcast or not, I think for me and Hunter, like, that was, it's been worth it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're meeting guys that we would never would have dreamed that we would have met or gotten
to sit
down
with.
But
you know the funny thing about that is that, like, these people that you're talking about, you never would have dreamed that you would have ever met them. No one could be more of a regular guy than a fishing guide, like, or a successful fishing guide. Like, I guess you could have fishing guides that are all pumped up with their egos and stuff like that. But a successful fishing guide is somebody that gets along with
everyone that they ever have on their boat that, like we were talking about before, knows how to entertain, is a nice person. It's somebody that somebody wants to spend 8 hours with. I mean, God, imagine if you got on the boat with somebody and you're like, let me off of this thing. Well, I mean, that's not going to be, that's not going to be one of the people that's on your list, I don't think. You know, it's somebody, they know how to do it. Like, that's their business, is being a cool person, a nice person. And it's funny, like, I don't know, like at the Miami Boat Show just recently, I'm coming back from that right now. People are like, it's really nice to meet you or whatever. Or, you know, you look taller on television. I get that all the time. but that's because I hope I look taller on television. Anyway, but it's like, you know, you're just a regular person. Like, you make your living for a long time anyway, picking people up at the dock. And no matter what walk of life they come from, no matter what area of the world they come from, your job is to entertain them. So I don't know why it would be any different. That's why I think it's kind of funny. Like, when you're saying, you know, these guys, like, you're putting them up on this pedestal, but they're the most regular person. That what separates them is this wealth of experience and hopefully a willingness to share it. And that's where the podcast comes from. But so why a podcast? Like, why did you think of all the things that you could do? Like, what do you do for a living?
So I'm actually a college pastor at a church in Tallahassee. Work with a couple hundred FSU students.
Okay. And what do you do?
I work for the fire department in Tallahassee.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's a good job.
And so you got plenty of spare time to think about what you could be doing on your days off.
A lot of free time.
Yeah. Okay. So of all the things that you could do with your spare time, and you also have kids.
Mm-hmm. I have a daughter.
Okay. Yeah. One daughter. No kids
no
for
kids
you.
No kids yet.
Why have a podcast?
Well, there's a sense to us where we wanted to create something that we would want to listen to. We both listen to podcasts. There are some great fishing podcasts out there, but there's something about, like, man, wouldn't it be fun to go around and ask the questions and meet the people and try to just contribute to what's already happening? You know, you guys with the Waypoint Collective, you know, there's a kind of a gold rush right now of, wow, we can go around and interview people and get this content and hear these stories. We talked about this on when we sat down with you for our podcast, but there's some limitations that television has, and I think it's a form of art. I think that they're trying to get these beautiful shots of fish, and, you know, when I watch a television show, I want to see somebody cast at a tarpon, or I want to see, you know, the colors of, you know, the dolphin. I mean, just, but for us, like, we were like, we think this is the best medium for getting good content. You know, it's a lot to say, hey, Tom, let's meet up and write a book, you know, but to say, hey, let's have a conversation and record it.
Well, this is exactly the one of the things that I find most interesting about it is that we hadn't really planned this, put it together yesterday. Now, of course, I've been trying to get certain people for a year and have it set up and it falls through, or it's set up, but you got to change it. But it's really, you're really asking very little of someone. You got an hour. Okay. Yeah. That could be before work. That could be after work. That could be at their house. It could be at your hotel room. It could be wherever. Right now, this is at an exit off of a highway where we kind of get together and go, hey, yeah, I'd really like to do that. Let's, I'm going to be driving here. And you're like, oh, yeah, well, we can meet at this exit. And so for me, it's really refreshing. The whole podcast thing is that I don't need a crew. I don't need much equipment. The equipment that we're using is cheap. And, of course, we are sacrificing a little bit of quality right now with the trucks going by. I hope that's not too bad for the quality of the thing. But this can be done anywhere with a very small time commitment from your guest. That, I think, is one of the reasons why it's successful. Plus, man, I posted this picture the other day. I couldn't believe it. And that's why I posted it. Because, like I said, February 27th was when Chasten Whitfield's podcast went live on my deal. First of all, I could not believe that, like, almost immediately, like, 1,000 people listened. Like, wow. Like, That's crazy. And so with this little deal on this cement table sitting in Live Oak, Florida, this could be listened to almost every country in the world. And I posted this picture the other day of the provider that I use, Libsyn. It shows this cool map, and it shows like the areas where you've had downloads, and you can hover over it, and it shows, you know, you had two in South Korea, or you had, you know, wherever, like all of these crazy countries. And I just can't believe that with almost no equipment and certainly no experience, certainly no technical training, that anyone can just create a podcast and it can go literally worldwide without much money, without much time, without much training, without much of anything. And I think that makes it a really cool world that we're living in right now, because like guys like you can decide, this is some cool information that I would like out there. And this is, I think we can put our own little spin on it. And are we going to write about it? Are we going to video it? How are we going to do this? And I think that's why a lot of people are embracing the podcast space, because it's cheap, it's quality, and I don't know, it's interesting.
And on top of that, I think even just the information you're getting, I mean, you can follow somebody on Instagram, you know, get their highlight reel, you know, they jumped 8 fish today and boated 2, and you know, they're at the bar tonight, you know, drinking beers with their clients, or you know, whatever, it is a great day. But you get that when you sit down with somebody face to face, like we're doing right now, which is what we haven't done, I don't think, any over the phone, which we're trying to avoid.
Yeah,
I think you sit down face to face with a guy, you're going to get stuff that he's not going to share on his Instagram. You know, where did this guy come from? How did he get to hear from, you know, where he was 10 years ago? It's just an interesting way to get information. I think it's a good way to share it too.
So far with 13 in the can, almost all of these are with successful fishing guides, right?
Yeah, well, I was going to add that one of the things we did want to do is kind of have a mix of, you know, well-known guys and then guys who have just, they're great fishermen, but they've just been faithfully, you know, building their client list. Some of the guys that we've interviewed with really like have really just been doing this for 30 years, building it off of word of mouth. There's some, you know, some great guys. They're just not super tech savvy, you know, and, it's been really fun to mine out some information from guys that maybe people have never heard of,
right?
But are really great fishermen and really great guys.
Yeah, I like that too. But in the 13 that you've done so far, have you come up with any common themes that you're like, all these people are kind of like this? Like, is there a common theme?
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. That's something that we are desiring to do, is to try to find a way to take all of it and to compile it, to figure out how, you know, what makes these guys tick. The biggest common theme, when we talk about this all the time, and you talked about this on our podcast, is a full glass can't receive water. In other words, a lot of the greatest people that we've met so far, and we've met many more guys than we've interviewed so far, you know, the greatest guides have this unsatiable desire to get better and better and better and better and learn. And so we're seeing that there's just a passion, just a love for fishing that people have. And there's different ways they guard it and try to nurture that, kindle that. And then really a lot of the guys, you know, you mentioned this, you know, we, at first it's just like, wow, I can't believe this guy sat down. Oh, wow, I can't believe this guy would meet with us. And then, just what you said, and you realize, no, these are really good. They have really good people skills.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? You're on a boat with a person every day for 30 years. Like, you should be good with people, or you got to be a really, really good fisherman.
Yeah.
so, yeah, I mean, that's some, Josh, what have you
seen? Yeah, just the most common things, you know, we ask. A lot of our questions are fishing oriented for the most part, and how can someone be a better angler or just person on the water? And it comes down to, like Hunter said, it seems like the first thing everybody says is time on the water. You know, that's a big thing that literally everyone we've asked that question to has said that, which is very important, I think. And then it goes back to just the desire to always, you know, once everybody basically says, once someone thinks they know everything, that's when their progression just stops. You can't ever stop trying to grow or stop trying to learn. Everybody, you know, that you're with at some point is going to have something you can pick up on and learn from, whether they're better than you or worse than you, or you just, you got to come into it with an open mind.
You really end up learning a lot from your customers. And in a lot of ways, those are the things that make you better as a fishing guide, is that, you know, part of being a fishing guide is to learn how to teach people things quickly and easily in a very, very simple way, right? So the lady from Indiana who's never been down here and shows up with a longtime customer of yours, and you're kind of like, okay, I got to teach her how to do whatever we're doing, catch a bonefish or whatever. And she's not taking it to it like most of the other people, because she's not drawing from the same experience for whatever reason. So you have to take a different approach. And sometimes those are the days where you're like, wow, I told this different story and she got it like right away. And immediately she started out fishing the other guy with no experience. It's like, wow, maybe I could do better for everybody that I'm teaching if I took this different approach. And I don't know, it's kind of interesting like that.
That's another big thing, is teaching, you know, or helping to guide. Not that me and Hunter aren't guides, but fishing with each other, it helps that teamwork, especially with sight fishing, as opposed to Hunter being on the bow and me saying, there's a fish right here.
Yeah,
that doesn't tell him anything. We actually had a pretty cool moment on, we did a podcast with Rob Fordyce, and he walked us through how a shot at a tarpon would go. You know, okay, there's a fish at 10 o'clock, point your rod, you know. And that was something we had picked up with somebody we had fished with a day before that. You know, I'd never even thought of that. Point your rod. Now I know where he's looking.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so point your rod. I know where Hunter's looking. Okay. A little to the left, a little to the left. There he is right there. Do you got him? Yeah, I got him. And then you can go from there. And it's just little things. I mean, there's so many small, minute things that, you know, by themselves don't matter, but when you put them all together, it brings the success level up.
One of the other common themes is, you know, I think there's sometimes a stereotype around fishing guides that, like, you know, they're, especially if you're not in the fishing community, you know, these are guys that they can't do an 8 to 5, you know, they want to be on the water. And yeah, if you're on the water every single day, then you're going to know where the fish are. So you can put the boat over there and put me on some fish. And man, I genuinely believe this. I have not sat down with a guide that I think wouldn't be successful in other areas if they chose to do them, other vocations. Their attention to detail, their work ethic, they're smart guys. They work really hard. They take what they do serious. They care about people. So that's been another neat thing too, is just to understand, like, some of these guys, I'm like, man, whatever they would have chose to do, they could have gone to banking. They could have done
anything. If they were interested in it.
Yep.
I mean, in my own situation, that is not the case. Like, maybe I have the capacity to have done something else, but not if I'm not interested in it.
Yeah.
If I'm interested in it, it's a different deal. And fishing for me was the first thing in my life besides wrestling. And I never thought that I was going to, you know, there's no opportunity for, I mean, there's professional wrestling, but that's a whole different deal. But there's really no opportunity there, right? So, you know, you never have this dream that you're going to make a living wrestling, but you could be a wrestling coach, I guess, or you could be, you know,
but you'd be on the WWE.
Well, that's a different kind of wrestling. That's the squared, that's the squared circle. And I would have to go against Rey Mysterio Jr. because he's the only one that's around my weight class.
You'd have to have a niche. You'd have to be able to have some sort of special
it
little.
Could be
niche.
The fishing ninja.
Yeah, you could go out there and hit people, break rods over people.
You could come out there with a fly rod and lasso them around the neck.
No, that'd be fun.
Like in Game of Thrones when the Targaryen brother gets.
I practice casting with my 2-year-old. She runs around and I'll cast in front of her and she'll run towards it and I'll strip, 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 and then she'll try to bend down and pick it up.
Get
you know?
It?
Oh yeah, it's so fun. It's a lot of fun.
That's how I would practice clearing line off the deck. I would strip it all in, tie it to my dog's collar, and throw the ball. And you do that over and over and over again, and you don't step on the line after you do that. Like, practicing those kind of things is super important. And you know, you got a dog, you got a ball.
Go ahead and write that one down.
Yeah, you got a dog, you got a ball, then you can practice clearing. I can promise you that a Labrador Retriever runs, a driven Labrador Retriever runs every bit as fast as a Tarpon. And here's the difference, though. They pull harder. Like, there's more friction against the actual earth than there is against the water. So when it does get caught around your foot, you know, usually you would do it with a butt section. So it's like 50-pound test. Your dog will pull you off your feet.
Yeah. So, that's some great insight right there.
Yeah, so there's even more reason to get good at it, because last time he pulled you off your feet and the fly line dug into to your ankle and it hurt. So
yeah, with practicing casting too, you know, you go out and you're like, man, when I first started fly fishing, I grew up and we were mostly, you know, using spinning reels, and my dad would fly fish in the stream some, but mostly spinning reels. And I started picking up a fly rod and I come out to an area like this, you know, big grassy field, and just be like, I'm killing it, man. Woo. You know, like, yeah, you know, and then you get on the boat and you're the line control and there's wind and the boat's shifting and it's rocking and it's
very different.
It's very different than the grassy field. That's a good little practice tip right there too, with trying to help clear line.
Yeah. I think that, a lot of anglers, you know, come down, they show up on the boat and they're like, yeah, I've been practicing every day, but they're not. I started writing some articles about this a while back, because all they're doing is coming out to the field and keeping the line up in the air and practicing and then throwing an 80-foot cast and then stripping into six, you know, 50 and then picking it up and casting and then shooting 30 feet. And it's practice, but it's not usable practice. Like, it's not perfect practice. And the thing is, like, I came up with this article that I wrote a long time ago, which was the two target drill, where there's a target at like 11 o'clock. And then there's a target at 9 o'clock. So just like the situation where we were talking about with that Rob walked you through how he would do it, I would just stand there and I would be like, okay, there's a fish coming. And this is a very common situation. It's going to show up at 9 o'clock or at 11 o'clock. The guide's going to have you there. And then the boat's going to be stopped. And then this fish is just going to start moving around like this. And it might get closer or further away. So then your second opportunity is going to be at 9 o'clock. And so, you know, the first cast is 60 feet at 11, trying to hit a hula hoop. Then you strip back in. He didn't eat it. Okay, now I'm going to cast over here and lead him, you know, to here. And it's going to be at 9 o'clock and it's going to be 40 feet. So you're working with two different line lengths and you're working with two different targets, and you're working with having to not step on the line. And then when that's over, you don't just start waving the line around again. You strip it all the way back into the ready position and then roll cast from the ready position to the target at 11 o'clock, strip back in, and then go at 9. And then you reverse them. You strip all the way back into the ready position. You cast at 9 o'clock, 40 feet. Okay, he didn't eat that, and he's kind of going away, and we're going to try this over-the-shoulder kind of Hail Mary shot and see if it works at 11 o'clock. And, you know, those kind of drills work so much better. I mean, 30 minutes like that beats 10 hours waving it around in the field.
Yeah, that's the type of gold with the podcast with the Captain's Collective.
Oh, so I should have done that on yours.
Yeah, that was good. Well,
it's one of those. You know, one bad cast in the water is better than six in the air. You know, you can throw perfect loops all day, but if you can't get it open at 40 feet in front of a fish, then.
And I've thought about a good, like, I was at a sports store the other day, and I've used these before, like, in hotel gyms, but I think it's called a Bosa ball, but it's like an exercise ball, but it has the platform on top of it, and you can stand on it, and you can do squats, and you can do different exercises with it, and it's a stabilization kind of core exercise tool. And I was like, you know, that's probably a pretty good thing to stand on and cast right there. That'll add
that
a factor into it.
That is a great idea.
I was going to buy it, but it was like $90. I was like, oh, I don't know.
You can find one of those at a garage sale.
That's
for free. There's some lady trying to get rid of those. And now's the perfect time. Let's see. It's a month and a half after the new year. There are Bosu balls everywhere.
Out the Bosa.
Yeah, they are. that's where you just gotta stop by the old garage sale when you see. That's where I pick up most of my workout stuff.
Oh yeah.
I almost buy nothing new. Like, well, like if it's like kettlebells or like a barbell or something, but like those are hard to find. But dumbbells, you can find those at almost every garage sale, especially if you like dumbbells that are less than 50 pounds, because most people have them sitting around and they don't use them anymore.
Yeah, I have a garage gym. I love it. That was like game changing for me. And that's like with us, like with the podcast, trying to what I would say I underestimated in is just the administrative, trying to set it up, be mobile, be able just to go on a whim's notice. I thought it would be much harder to get good guests and good content. And now I just found that it's truthfully, for us at least, the hardest part is just kind of making it all come together and everybody being at the same place at the same time.
So are you trying to like do quite a few and then have them? What's your release schedule?
Yeah, I mean, so on the website, I put every 2 to 3 weeks. We felt like for at least the first year, that's probably a pretty good pace. So that's why we've been podcasting for a couple months, but we've only been releasing for the past 6 weeks. And so that's kind of the content scale, at least to start with, and just see how it goes, see if that's consistent enough to keep people engaged and interested. There's not some sort of perfect science that I didn't have any insider knowledge on every 2 weeks. But you know, our desire is just to keep kind of spanning the different regions. We got an interview coming up with a guy from Destin who's going to come over and see us, you know, trying to just kind of keep things moving. Josh is like, you know, Josh is like, he's always been this way. He's just kind of got a little extra lucky charm with him. And so he throws a lot of the Hail Marys, and I'm just, you know, trying to do the
administrative. Here we are. Well, yeah. I mean, like, what you were saying earlier, what are they going to say? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. They said what we expected them to say, you know, but if not, then we got it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of.
And you haven't had anybody be rude or anything.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah.
If you had, so we were trying to blue sky like what you think it's going to look like this time next year. What about your guest list? Do you have some people on there that are just like, you know,
the white
like
whale?
The white whale.
I think our white whale is Flip Palette, but I don't know if we can get him or not.
Yeah, Steve Huff.
Steve Huff
would love to do Steve Huff.
I'd like to get Andy Mill on too.
Andy Mill would be great. Bill Bishop.
That's the white whale, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Flip Palette, he'll do it.
Yeah, we would love to get Flip. And I mean, honestly, one of the things I've loved about, like, we are hoping to, this sounds a lot more like kind of, you know, over the top than it needs to be. But we really are trying to form a community. I think that's one of the great things that's coming out of some of this content. You know, when you have the guys from Captains for Clean Water on, like there's starting to be a little bit more of a community happening, emerging there versus just people just tuning in. But, you know, like you hear about people, they'll send you, hey, what about this guy? And you're like, you look in and you're like, this guy's awesome. Like this guy, I love what this guy's doing in Destin and how he's managing his business and his approach on it. And, you know, like the guys that are doing stuff in cities like Destin or Sanibel that are really tourist oriented. We talked on your podcast, you know, but the person getting off the cruise ship, you know, for like better phrase, you know, they're dealing with a lot of that in those cities versus, you know, a city like where my dad is in Carrabelle in the Lanark area that, like, you know, there's not too many wives saying, you know, baby, take me down to Carrabelle, you know, but so people are coming and they're coming to fish, you know?
Yeah.
So there's some of the white whales we don't know. We don't know who they are.
To be
yet.
Fair, you were a white whale until today.
Really? Yeah.
Now you're a wall mount.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. That's what I had envisioned. That would be awesome to be a wall mount. No, I mean, I think you'll be surprised that almost everybody will do it, especially if you're like, you know, it's only an hour and we can do it anywhere. That makes a big difference. Like getting somebody, my experience is getting somebody on the TV show. I mean, the amount of difference between getting somebody to sit down on the podcast and getting somebody to be a guest on the TV show. Man, we need you on these days, and you need to stay for three. I need to have you ready to go for 3 days, but we might finish in an afternoon, and in which case we're going to move on. And so you're going to be sitting at the hotel for a while. So you might want to bring your girlfriend or wife, you know, with you or whatever. But there's no guarantee. It might take us all 3 days to film this thing, and there's really no guarantee that it's going to happen. And then there's just so much involved. And the podcast is just so much easier. It's so much easier. It's an hour. We can do it anywhere. Like, I'll go to iCast and I'll get a whole bunch of them at iCast because everybody's there. And it's a great time to just sit down and talk to somebody. I got a bunch of them at the Miami Boat Show. I'll get a bunch of them on the way to places. Like, if I got a shoot coming up somewhere, I'll stop in three different places and meet with somebody or see an old friend that I hadn't seen in a while. That's pretty cool. I like that a lot. In you guys' situation, man, you should be like going fishing with these guys for a half a day and then doing a podcast, because now you're talking.
Yeah, we would love that. We'll try to say stuff like, hey, you know, we'll come in, we're gonna trailer, where do you think we should go? It's kind of tough because, you know, we want to respect their time and their livelihood. And, you know, we're like, hey, if you end up having to book somebody that day last minute, I understand, it's your business. We'll be flexible. We're learning that. Everybody's a lot more laid back and flexible than we originally thought they would be.
Yeah.
You know, I work in a world where a lot of stuff is calendared out months and months and months in advance and pretty concrete. And everybody's been pretty chill. Like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? And you're like, I guess driving to see you, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's cool. What have been the biggest surprises on the podcast? People sitting down with you, I guess.
Other than just the people sitting down, it's so cool just hearing. For me, I mean, we like to hear people's backstories. Hearing somebody like Harry, like, you know, where he started from, how he got to the Keys, how he ended up in Panacea of all places. It's just, it's cool to look kind of behind the curtain at some of these guys' lives. And
I agree with you. Very much so. That's been what's been most interesting for me too. But so you're seeing behind the curtain, and then what? You find, are you interested in how they got started fishing? Because that I am, because it was a path that I was not expected for me, and so I'm kind of always kind of wonder, is that the same thing for these other people? But I find, you know, some people grew up, like I just did one with Jeff Maggio, Lunker Dog. And he just grew up in the business. Like, his dad was a boat builder, and he grew up, and he knew he was going to be a fishing guide. From when he was a kid, he knew he was going to be a fishing guide. And he just didn't know which style of boat he was going to be on. Was it going to be on a sport fisher? Was it going to be on a little boat or whatever? But he just knew. And for me, it wasn't that way. I didn't even know a fishing guide was something that you could do for a living. I was quite surprised for the first several years that anybody paid me anything to go fishing. and then, you know, and then you just find out, okay, well, you can do this, but it's not all flowers. It can be a tough way to make a living. And I would imagine that that's some of the experience, some of the stories that you're getting too, is like, especially some of these old guys, like fishing, like we discussed a little bit earlier about the river runs through it. And now you have social media and you have YouTube and you have some things that are driving people's interest to go fishing. Back in the day, it was like, you know, you had a couple of TV shows. You had some really big TV shows that were on, like, you know, The American Sportsman. And you had, like, you know, Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom and things like that, which were really, really cool. But for the most part, man, I mean, it was... There wasn't a lot pushing people to want to do it. So it was kind of underground, you know? And so I would imagine that, you know, back in the day, getting the story from some of the old guys of how they used to get their business. And I would imagine that, you know, September rolls around, it's dead.
Just shuts down.
Shuts down. Now, today is way different. And there's a million ways for people to tell their story and to get people to go fishing with you. But man, I would imagine that would have been really, really tough.
We were going to ask you this on ours, but more people will hear it here, maybe. So speaking on that social media thing, and that, you know, a lot of guys are using that for their marketing, for their business, and, you know, just ways to kind of put themselves out there. There's a ton of people that are kind of saying it has a negative effect on just everything in the outdoor world, whether it be, you know, it gives kind of a skewed look on how fishing or hunting actually is. It's just kind of feeds into everybody's kind of right now mentality. You're very active on your social media accounts. Seems like, what are some things that you can do or we can do or anybody else can do with a social media account that kind of keeps it away from that negative aspect? I mean, You seem to be very good at that.
Well, I don't know if I'm any good at it. I think social media has no rules, and you can do it any way you want to. So the fact that somebody might be better at it than somebody else, I don't know that that is a fair comparison. I don't know that it's been out there long enough to be able to tell who's doing a better job, and I don't think it's based on followers or likes or engagement. I think that there are some small accounts that I follow that I think are doing a much better job than some of the larger accounts. So I think trying to be authentic, I think trying to be honest, like, we didn't do so well today.
Yeah.
You know, that is a story that's not told that much. And it leads people to believe that every day is awesome. And it leads, you know, and that cannot be good for inexperienced anglers to come down with really high expectations and be disappointed. That does not lend itself to somebody that's going to continue to visit that area or fish that often, because they thought they were going to catch 20 tarpon and they caught zero tarpon, even though they hooked four. Okay. Hooking four is a really good day. A really good day. Hooking one is a great day. That story is not the story that you're getting for the most part on social media, and everybody's as guilty about it as anyone else. Nobody wants to, you know, have a picture of yourself like going, like, you know, with your hands up going, we didn't catch any today. Yeah. I mean, that's not getting you very far. So everybody wants to post the best picture they can, and that's cool. But I don't know. I mean, I think there's a downside to anything and everything. Like, I don't think there's any one thing that has nothing but upside. Like, if you look deep enough into it, something or somebody is suffering from the success that one thing is having. There's not one thing that you can put into your body that is good for everyone on this planet. You know, I mean, oranges are good for you. We're in orange country right here. Somebody somewhere gets sick if they eat oranges, right? I mean, like, it's not a universal thing. So I don't think there are any universal truths that you can say about social media other than if you want your social media to grow, it needs to be social. Like, that's the whole point, is that there's interaction between the people that are looking at it and yourself. So when you have an account that's so big that you can't ever read the comments, or there's so many comments that, you know, what if you get a lot of comments, some of them are not going to be something that you want to read. It doesn't make you feel all that great when there are haters out there or whatever. So you choose not to read the comments. But I think the most interesting thing about social media is that as long as it stays social. But I also think that social media has completely changed the landscape of guiding in a way that sometimes is good and sometimes isn't. When I first started guiding, it was the first one to the boat ramp and the last one to leave, that the other guides looked and were like, man, that guy's working hard, or he's broken down. You know, something's going on. But when that happens every single day, your truck's there first and it's the last to leave. Eventually, even the guides that don't like the newcomer are kind of like, man, dude's put in his time. I'm going to send him a trip or two. Seems like a nice kid. And then you start developing, you know, a reputation based upon hard earned time on the water. That doesn't happen anymore. I mean, it does some, but for the most part, it's much easier to have a large audience on social media and recruit your trips that way. I find that you're probably still going to get more trips from other guides than you would from social media, but not everybody. Some people are really good at painting a picture that results in a lot of phone calls or a lot of bookings. And that may also result in a lot of days on the water. So there are occasions that happens, but there are certainly situations out there where people are painting a much rosier picture than actually exists. And then the people that get on the boat, either with them or with the people that are working around them, are coming with these unrealistic expectations of what's going to happen. And it only results in people that are not satisfied with that fishing and want to, you know, feel like they got sold a bill of goods. That can't be good for anybody.
And I know guides that have full books
off word of mouth because they've been doing it a long time and they're really good. And then that have websites that are cringy, you know, you'd be like, oh, you know, but I mean, they're, it's the guy in Atlanta who goes back, you know, to his office, and there's another guy that loves fishing. He can fly anywhere. And he goes, man, if you love XYZ fishing, you got to go with this guy.
Yeah, no, that's the way that it happens. That's the way that you get the people that book 5 days in a row and they do it every single year. And they go back and they're at their cocktail party or whatever. And the guy's like, yeah, we went fishing. I really want to go bone fishing. And they're like, look, if you really want to go, like, I'll tell you who I go with reluctantly because they don't want the days to.
Yeah. And that's the thing you asked about, a common thread amongst really great fishermen earlier. They're all a little competitive too. You know, there's a healthy competitive nature.
Do you find that they're all a little bit weird?
Some weirder than others. Some of them have been.
I wouldn't say weird. I'd just say quirky.
Quirky. Yeah.
That's quirky's a really good way to describe a fishing guy. But I think that most fishing guides are definitely a little weird. Most fly tires are even weirder. Artists are probably even weirder than that. But in order to be a fishing guide, in order to be an artist, in order to be a fly tire, it lends itself to a certain personality. And I think that like a fishing guide needs to be, well, I got friends that are all over the map. Like some are very detail oriented. Some, man, their boat is a wreck. And you wonder how in the world anything gets accomplished in that boat. But man, they're on the meat every day. And then other people are just, you know, like Scott Walker, just everything he's got is tight and shined up and clean and glistening and brand new. And everything is perfect. And every rod is exactly the same. Every rig is exactly the same length, exactly the same knot. Everything is perfect. And, you know, that's what I've learned about being around a bunch of these different guys, is that there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat. And, man, you know, if that's what it took to be that dialed in with all of your tackle and to wash and chamois every single thing that comes on or goes off of that boat, then everyone would be doing that. But you know what? Everybody doesn't do that. And everybody isn't as – and that works for Scott Walker. But it's unnecessary for – Steve Roger. It's unnecessary for somebody else that doesn't feel like, look, man, my time's better spent somewhere else. But Scott Walker is just, he is the most detail oriented, the most organized, the most precise in every single thing he does of anyone there. And then when you add that habit to, you know, what makes, you know, Steve Roger great, they make an amazing team together. And that's what's cool to see. But the fact that, you know, Scott is so organized and maybe Steve isn't as organized, they both catch a lot of fish. It's the same way when you see them throw a net. Like, everybody can set up a net differently. The only thing that really matters is, does it open every single time and do you catch the bait? And I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to skin a cat. And even with Rich and I, man, so many times when we get on the boat, you know, we're rigging something up and I turn the wheel this way and then I go down to pick something up and he's already turning the wheel the other way. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, we think so perfectly opposite one another. It's amazing that either one of us catches any fish. Like, we'll catch more fish separately than we will together because I want to go this way and he wants to go that way. And we both catch fish, but it's the exact opposite approach. It's so weird. But yeah, fishing guides are a little bit weird, I think.
And I mean,
quirky.
Yeah, everybody in this world's a little quirky. I mean, right now we have like these headsets on. We look like we're playing Halo Xbox or something. And I just noticed this, and we should have mentioned this before, but I mean, there's currently people pulling into a fusion buffet that's Chinese and country.
Oh, sweet. Chinese and country.
Chinese and country. So I don't. That just needed to be added into the equation, that when I say that some of the guys are quirky and weird, I say that as a man wearing a headset outside of a Chinese
I'm as weird and quirky as any. I'd probably put myself at the top of the list. I don't know. My son was always, both boys and my daughter, you know, that when you're growing up, you're always worried about, like, are you going to fit in? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? And I was always like, look, man, it's perfectly fine to be weird. I'm weird. Everybody I know is weird. all my friends are weird. And they're like, no, they're not, Dad. And I'm like, yeah, no, they're weird. Like, each one of them, you take a Jason Stemple or a Hop Litzwire or something, like, everybody's got their quirks. And part of it has to do with taking care of the equipment that it takes to make to do the job. But everybody's got their little quirks.
It's weird when you're a kid. Everybody just wants to be exactly the same. And then you get to a certain age and you just, I'm just going to be me.
Well, social media adds that pressure. I work with college students and, you know, there's all sorts of positive things. You know, it's a way for us to connect. It's a way for good stories and content, things to go out. But there's a pressure that I think a lot of people have that they do want to fit in. They want to be liked, and they look to social media, or they look to fitting in as the way to kind of feel like, okay, I'm happy and I accept who I am, you know? And it's like, that's a piece of the whole puzzle. With some of the best guides that we've met, they're all a little different, but they're all really comfortable in their skin.
Yeah, you know? That's for sure.
So some of them, like, they're like, I suck at Instagram and I don't care because I love fishing. And then some of them are like, you know, you're like, their Instagrams are work of art. And then some people are everybody's using it different. And success, we talked about this on our podcast with you, but success looks differently for everyone, you know. Yeah. So just use it how you want to, but don't be a clone, you know, like, oh, I want to just copy everything that this person's doing. Well, the one thing you're not copying is that person's mindset, that they're comfortable with who they are and they're okay with being quirky.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. All right, cool, man. So Captain's Collective, that's the name of the podcast. You got 13 recorded, 6 out now. Who's out now? Harry Spear was your first.
There's 3 out now. Harry Spear, John Swanson, who was a former Marine, who now is a guide in our area. We just released Bo Basso and
sorry, Bo.
Sorry, Bo.
I have a hard time. He's one that doesn't listen to podcasts. So
yeah,
you're safe.
Yeah, yeah. And then we're about to release Scott Burgess from Skinny Situations Charter. He's a Tallahassee guy. We're excited. We've got a good lineup coming up, and we're learning a lot. We're getting better each time, and you know, we're trying to hone in on the craft of basically sitting down with these guys and mining out gold.
Cool. And where does somebody find something?
The
Captain's Collective.
Yeah, just go to captainscollective.com, and we have social media on Facebook and Instagram that just started. We're definitely on the not as good at social media from like an aesthetic side. You know, we're still learning all that. That's the fun. So just come join the journey with us and follow us at captainscollective.com.
So, but that's the only place that you can listen
to
the podcast?
iTunes, Spotify, iTunes. Stitcher. If you go to the website, you can kind of pick your poison on what you want to listen to.
All right, cool, man. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck, and thank you for having me on yours, and thanks for being on this one. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, Tom.
All right, see ya.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV